Executive Committee, February 26, 2004, tape number one.
We don't?
Yes.
What do we need, just over 50%?
Six, yeah, and I can be included in the conference.
Sure.
Okay, any additions to the agenda that aren't there, or corrections?
Oh, I just got them today. And I haven't read them yet, sorry.
The what?
The minutes.
Oh, I was asking about the agenda.
Oh.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't have.
Don't worry, it's in the air.
Okay, is there any objection to the agenda?
Nope.
Okay, then I guess we can consider it approved. The minutes from our last meeting were emailed earlier today. I understand they are delayed because we have, if you're ready for this, seven grade appeals that have been filed, and that puts an incredible amount of drain on both Melanie and Laurel's time, having been through four of them myself. It's incredibly time consuming, so they're done.
They're done.
Yeah.
I just haven't read them yet.
So there you are, we're done, because we can't approve the minutes. The only correspondence received, that I've received as chair, is two things. One is an invitation to that budget summit on March 10th down in Long Beach. The president and the president of the Associated Students and the president, or the chair of the Senate from all the campuses, we're now going to get together, and I'm not exactly sure what we do, but we talk about the budget, I guess. And Noel to one
yes.
Year. So that's happening. And then secondly, the trustees, March 10th. The trustee selection committee for president of San Jose State met yesterday to consider candidate qualifications and determine which candidates to advance to the next level of consideration. So our colleague Bill Crowley's brother will be temporary president for only so long. So that's that story. And that's the only correspondence I have. Anybody else have any correspondence you want to talk about? Pen pals? Emails? No? Okay. All right, correspondence received. Okay. Chair of the faculty, the only thing I wanted to talk to you about was Bob Cherney and Kathy Kaiser's visit. That's on the agenda, so we'll do that later. President of the university? Not here. Provost of the university? Not here.
Short meeting today.
Statewide Senator, Phil McGow? Not here.
He was walking down.
He's walking somewhere.
I saw him too.
We'll go through the list again. Chair elected in the Senate.
I don't know.
In terms of our electronic elections, at last count that I'm aware of, we were at 40% earlier today, which is further along at the same point in time than a year ago. It appears that the bugs have been cleared up for the PCs and that it's working quite well. So the elections close at midnight Thursday, which is coming up very quickly, isn't it? So we will know the outcome of the elections in the morning. The other main thing for us in structured functions is that because there are so many great appeals, if I don't quite seem normal, it does have an impact. We had to actually draw an emergency panel to supplement the original panel. So we have 8 faculty members serving on the panel for the entire year, but we had no great appeals in the fall. We've drawn a subsequent one, and certainly we've come to realize how when you get multiple great appeals, the policy does not work. It just becomes crazy to try to meet all of these timelines. So we are working with the schedules from faculty members to try to find common blocks of 3 hours to hear and deliberate on each of these juries. So we're very busy, and I appreciate your indulgence that Laurel, if it weren't for Laurel, I don't think this could quite happen. So, but it means she can't be doing the minutes and everything
right.
else, but it's a real team effort, but she's very definitely a key member here, and so I need her on this. So I beg your indulgence to let me use her.
She's all yours. Is that it for the minutes? Okay. Vice President, administration, I'm sorry.
Just a comment on, you know, the extension of the elections. I don't know what it did for your workload on structures and functions, because you all run the elections, right? But I have to say, I find that I know there were some glitches, you know, we all had, maybe I had to put an extra 30 seconds to think about what I was doing there, but I cannot believe that we are constantly having like to extend an election because a few people could not figure out that.
It was a real problem.
It's a software issue. It's an operating system, software base. It's not, I mean, because
it's not with all operating systems, they're all computers. And so definitely we met on this and I felt strongly that if it were just poor voter turnout, we could not extend the election.
I'm glad I brought it up, because that was my impression that, I got a little impasse and I gave up and didn't vote.
No, we just don't have the support with IT. Not that it's any of their fault, but if we all had up-to-date computers with all the latest software, it wouldn't be an issue. And enough memory.
Some of the problems that I had, it usually uses capitalized letters, but it wouldn't use capitalized letters. That's my login name. And then it erased. We did it on Rick's computer, and we tried it one way, and it wouldn't let us enter the password at all. Like, you'd enter the password, hit enter, and all of a sudden the password is gone again.
Right.
So
yeah.
There were really big problems.
Yeah.
Good, because I didn't understand, because I've never had a problem.
Yeah, I know.
You have the magic touch.
Well, we'll have the results tomorrow morning, and then we'll be ready to announce, to go out in an email tomorrow.
You might want to notify the winners and losers first before you notify the campus, give them a couple hours head start. That's what we did last time.
It is nice to find out through your personal email rather than
somebody tell you the hallway.
Laurel has, I think, you might have copies of the emails we used last year. All right. We'll just Vice President of Administration and Finance. Since we're going down the list, we'll come back to everybody else.
Thank you, Catherine. The only item I'd like to let you all know about, and some of you were in reengineering heard this, it has to do with a new system-wide task force that's been created that I've got from myself. I got appointed to, I'm not sure why I got appointed to, but I did. And it has to do with billing students who take excess units beyond the amount needed for graduation. The desire of the trustees and the governor to bill students the full cost of that instruction above 10% beyond their graduation requirements. The governor had hoped to implement this with this current budget year, coming up year 4 or 5, but it's not possible. So they've created this task force of several provosts. I'm not sure who the provosts are. Several presidents, some members of the statewide academic senate, I understand, a couple CFOs, to study this question. And I would like to, since I have a seat on it, I'd like to open myself to the Senate in some kind of a way if there's input to this task force. And it might be through the Student Affairs Committee. I'm not sure what the appropriate Senate committee or group is that I should maybe keep informed or talk to about. I certainly plan to talk to the ESAS people and our accounts payable, receivable people, and CMS people and so forth, but there are academic potential policy issues, of course.
Sure.
I'm not really very qualified on those, and I'd love to have some kind of a brain trust. I'm sure to talk to Eduardo about it, about these issues, so that I can communicate the feelings of at least several of our faculty.
At a minimum, Student Affairs academic planning might be interested in
that
as well.
They may be. So I guess I'll open myself.
Okay.
The first meeting is Monday, this coming Monday. I have no idea what the agenda will be. But I could certainly, I'm happy to share it if that's the
case. Okay, we have Rick Lettman and then Liz Bustinger.
Well, I'm glad you had
solicitor Larry Foote on this, Larry, because I'm very concerned about this. It sounds like there is a feeling up there at the upper echelons that there's a bunch of freeloaders or something, and I think you have to be very careful to find out if that's what's really going on. It's very difficult to imagine that. Most students are very anxious to get out and take what they need to get out. And those who are taking a lot of extra units, it's usually for some very good reason, such as they transferred in from out of state or even from somewhere else in state, but there was problems with a lot of stuff they couldn't use. Or they might have changed their major and have a lot of wasted units. There's all kinds of reasons that are perfectly legitimate. And besides that, I mean, we're in the business of selling education, not specifically degrees. So it seems to me that if somebody wants to stay here and get an education for whatever reason, they're as much entitled to it as anybody else.
Elizabeth?
I was wondering what the definition of graduation requirement is. Is it a unit requirement, or is it the number, like someone could have a double major and they might need more units. So are we talking 120, or are we talking the number of units you need given your major?
Or I think it's the latter.
Like, so you decide, I decide I want to be a joint chemistry business major. And I need,
I don't know.
You know, so I need 140 units.
That is true.
300.
I don't think it's been defined, and you have to be truthful.
Okay. I think that's important.
Yeah. Okay. The impetus for this, Reese has explained it to us, it occurs to me, is that it's supposed to be about access. It's that one of the ways of opening up access is to get students out who are theoretically sitting around taking too many units, not focusing on a major, changing a major five times, you know, as Rick says, you know, indulging in getting educated. And the average number of units, I think, for native students, those students that start here and finish here in the CSU, is 141, and the average number for transfer students is 142. And that was part of the revision of the transfer policy for the 45-15 thing I was talking about at the Senate last time, too. And this is part of the same package. So that's kind of the background.
Well, I'll report next time about how this meeting goes. That might give us a sense of, the reason I'm on it is to figure out how you can technically implement it from a financial point of view, not an academic policy perspective. But I'd like to be able to talk intelligently about the academic policy issues.
Well, it would be nice to build into this policy, if this is really the way we're headed, you know, an appeals process. So that the students, with perfectly good reasons for having extra units, don't get penalized. That's pretty harsh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These kind of things would be very helpful to our people. I'm sure the provost will and the other people on the committee, but that's all.
Any other questions for Larry? Okay. Moving on to chairs of the standing committees, and we'll come back through the list of reports. Senator Coleman, do you have a report from APC?
Yes, as soon as I can settle down and figure out where.
Okay, we'll come back to you to give you a chance to settle in. Senator McDonald from APC.
Hey, yeah, I do. Thank you. Let me find my notes. A couple of things that we're dealing with in EPC. One of them is, I mentioned last meeting, we're attempting to create a task force, university-wide task force, to develop a program review protocol. So to replace what had existed before WASC came to visit and to build on what we did for the interim program reviews that almost all the departments have gone through now. And we're trying to, in our last meeting, we decided that it was important to have representation from all the schools, including library and extended ed, and also representation from all the committees that were interested, that might be interested, including APC and EPC and SAC and FSAC, if interested, I'm not sure. So it sounds like it's going to be kind of a large task force now, but we're in the process right now of soliciting nominations from the schools. So that should have been going out. All the school representatives on EPC should have been going back to their schools at this point to talk to the chairs to try to get nominations. So, because we'd like schools to nominate people rather than picking people from schools if possible. So again, if you'd like to maybe find out what's going on in your schools about that, what we really want to have is a group that is very representative of all the different interests involved.
I had wanted to have something in place by the end of this year, but my committee told me that was extremely unreasonable and unrealistic. So I think what we're going to do is try to have a draft in place by the end of the year and then go through the approval process next fall. So that would be coming before the Senate next fall at some point. The second issue is that the GE committee in conjunction with, and I never can keep all of these different groups straight, the APCGE task force has created, I have a couple copies of this, has created a background for discussions of this GE path proposal to the schools. I don't think I have enough here, but I have some to kind of pass around if you want to take a look at them. And what it is it's, oh, here's another one. Is it takes those 6 points that were called the blueprint for change and is focusing on those 6 points and then asking each school curriculum committee to well, it's unclear exactly what's being asked. I mean, what's here tells me that each school maybe should come up with what their idea of what the path would look like is, comment on the existing path, also come up with these what the implications are of implementing this, what the financial implications are, what the implications are for maybe undeclared students, for all the different constituencies that would be affected by GE change. So that's also in the schools right now, and I'm trying to get a committee in science and technology in particular together to deal with some of the special issues that the science and technology majors have. And then finally, I had essentially just some questions for this committee. I hear sort of through the grapevine about policy changes, or maybe they're policy changes, maybe they're not policy changes. It's unclear coming down the pipeline, dealing with some of these new issues about getting students out, restricting number of units, those sorts of things. And the latest one that I just heard about was that the grade WU is no longer going to be replaceable.
I can give you an update on that.
Okay, great. Well, I guess then more general, my question is how do we communicate to faculty about these changes? Where is the forum for discussion of these changes? That's sort of my question. There was an issue in the beginning of the year, I don't know where that's gone, about limiting students to 19 units and not letting them go beyond 19 units a semester. Where are these issues and where do we discuss them? And those are my general questions.
So, should I include my report while I'm over? Or should I just concentrate on
this?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
so,
and I'm done with my report.
The Student Affairs Committee has been working on advising issues a lot, and we put a document together and invited Provost Ochoa and presented to him what we've been doing, the concerns we've identified. One of those that Elaine just mentioned is one of our concerns, and some suggestions of how to implement some changes. And so the communication was one of our big concerns and one of the suggestions to identify somebody to be in charge of communication of these issues. The WU, that came up in a new faculty lunch, I think it came up. There was Janet Swing from ESES and Lisa Noto, registrar, and they both had conflicting information on this WU, and so Lisa Noto said, yeah, soon it will not be able to replace a zero that results from a WU anymore by repeating the class. So kind of an uproar, different people got into this. There were some emails going back and forth, including Margot Axon.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end I called last couple of weeks ago the registrar and asked what is going on with this now, and so the current status is this policy is not changing anytime soon, so there is no plan of changing how the WU is treated currently. And then I asked if they change it, who would make this change, and I talked to Sean Pearson, the assistant registrar, and he said it would come through the provost's office. So there's no plan right now to change that. But that was one of the big things, that there are these issues, and that was one, the going, students were restricted to 16 units at the beginning of the semester, and one day it changed to 19, and there was really insufficient communication to people advising at that time that that was the case. Another one, students can withdraw now just by doing it at the computer. Previously, they needed the signature from the instructor. That's another thing. Also, right now, faculty doesn't really have access in PeopleSoft to see which students have withdrawn. So there is no record. You have to go to your AC, and they. I did that yesterday. It's a lengthy process to get a list of students who have withdrawn from a class. I don't know if you can. We couldn't.
I thought from you, do your class roster. They're pretty up to date.
The drops are on there, but I don't think the W.
But not a W.
So then, if you drop before the drop date, right. It's there. But yeah. The W's. If you had access to a grade roster, it would be on your grade roster already. But I tried to get a grade roster and it's not up yet.
You don't get enough.
So I tried that. So I couldn't figure out a way to do it except going through the AC, and I watched her do it, and it was mysterious.
Is that the
issue? So that was one big issue. The other big issue was training for faculty. There's really, it's support in the advising policy right now. It says that there should be training for people involved in advising. There is no such training program, but it would be beneficial to have something like that. And then the academic advising subcommittee conducted a survey of departments and deans, asking them how advising is done in their departments and schools, and so that there is some disconnect on what the advising policy says, how it should be done, and how it actually is done. So we asked Professor Chua to talk to the deans about that, to have them talk to the department chairs about that, and identify, first of all, make them aware of what's there, and then also get some feedback on if there is something that's unrealistic that the policy is asking for, but that really should be changed, or what kind of support they would need to be able to implement it the way it's asked to be done.
Edward has a question?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear, Brigitte, that the matter of the WU has been shelved for the time being, and that the registrar's office would bring it through the provost's office if it was going to be brought up again, and I trust that Eduardo, you would bring it to us in the Senate to consider.
Right. I would run it by the appropriate committee. Yeah. I guess it would be your call.
I'm not sure. I think this is unclear. Is it university standards first?
Well, it could always be, really it should be brought here to the executive committee, and then we would decide what to do with it. But the other matter that you mentioned, evidently has been implemented, which is that students can withdraw without our signature, or without even notifying us. And I don't know how that happened. I don't recall that we ever had a discussion about this, or even notification of it. And I'm kind of upset about that. I think, first of all, as a matter of principle, we should have at least been notified, if not that I had a chance to discuss it. But also, I don't like it, because I don't like having students disappear, and I don't know whether they're simply being irresponsible or if they've actually legitimately withdrawn. In some cases, I might be able to assist them or help them or change their minds if they come to me about wanting to withdraw. So I wonder if, Eduardo, do you know anything about this? Or
well, I think that I would say it's the general trend in higher ed is as we move to automated systems to provide students with this option. That's been my experience in several campuses that with the W grade is comes at a cost to the student. It remains in their record. It's not something that, it's much better for them to drop it earlier. So when they do that, they do pay a price. But, they're adults, and if they want to leave a class, they should have the ability to do that. And I think that's kind of, the drift of the way things have been going. But, I think it should have been something that should have been at least discussed, and we should have gotten input on it rather than making it purely. I think there's a tendency in general to, particularly with PeopleSoft implementation, people are so caught up in the mechanics and the logistics of getting it up and running that sometimes they may lose sight of the forest for the trees in terms of realizing that, you know, wait, this is just a technical decision, this is an actual decision that this procedure has some sort of an impact on the teaching and learning experience, and we've got to learn it by the faculty and see what the perspective is.
Well, at the very least, could we request then, now that this has been implemented, that we at least be notified when students withdraw?
I'll take that comment and transmit it. I don't know what that entails technically, so, but I'll certainly look into it.
It seems that on the withdrawal one, that it should not be too complicated to be able to have that reflected in a class roster, you know, to have a W put there, okay? After the official drop period, and I don't know, that might be the easiest way to do it, just so if a student's not showing up in 2 weeks, we just pull up our class roster. If we see a W, then it's reflected. We know what happened. The other, though, on the, and I wanted to ask, has U changed? Anything changed around that? Or was that part of the WU? I didn't know if I was hearing it correctly.
I think it used to be U, now it's WU.
Oh, it's WU. That's
so
what
U
we're
doesn't
talking
exist
about
anymore.
Then the other is just on advising in general. You know, I went to one of those trainings a few weeks ago. It has changed quite a bit. And I had mentioned at the training, like, you know, that I was surprised that there weren't more training sessions or something, and apparently they have been advertised. But it might be a communication thing again, but it seems like clearly that faculty need to be up to date on that issue, because it is there, it's not that cumbersome, but students are going to be coming in for advising, and we need to be prepared, and we need to how to read the you know, the advising report and all of that, and it has changed. So I would just recommend that we get up to speed on this quickly, either through communication lists, know what's being done. But I was a bit surprised. It was like, oh, this is all new now.
Virginia, do you have a response to this mm-hmm. particular point?
So you're talking about the people self-advising?
Yeah, that's right.
So as this training has been going on, it has been not that widely advertised, two departments have done it so far. So the math department has done it in one other department, and they were the only ones to take advantage of that. So I think it is a communication issue, or it's not required. So
yeah, it's so.
Okay.
Well, two things. One is I'd like to share with Rick the observation that this is not just a matter of a student leaving or being an adult and leaving. It means that when I assign students to group projects, that in fact I have the expectation that these students are going to be working in groups, and when a student doesn't appear and students come to me and say, you know, Mr. Coleman so-and-so is not coming, and then I look at my record, I still see that they're in the class, that presents a problem. So I'd like to be notified of what that student's standing is. The other thing is that the distinction between the WU and the other, the U and the WU, within our catalog and within our grading policy, the important thing here is that the policy leads the technology rather than the technology leading the policy. And I want to reiterate that again, because there's a distinction between a WU, as I understand it, in terms of a U, which is a authorized withdrawal that the student has. The U is the designation for a student who has not submitted all of their work.
That's enough.
And therefore, no, technically you cannot give a student an F because you've not evaluated all of their work. So the distinction there is that you have to have a distinction between those two. And that has been a point, as I understand, of litigation. You can't give a student an F grade for work that where you have not evaluated their work academically. So I would like to have some clarification on that. And it would seem to come back then to the issue of the relationship between setting up standards and who establishes that, and how do we go about the business of doing that? Because this is a clear mechanism that I would like to keep in place. I'd like to be able to make the distinction between a student who has taken a course and failed, and a student who has disappeared for whatever reason in terms of unauthorized withdrawal.
Elaine O'Donnell. Folks, we are past the time certain. Okay, thank you. Melanie?
Just to say that I did represent us at the Associated Students Board meeting on Monday, and advising is a key concern of theirs, and they actually were working on a resolution to bring to the Senate on this, and then decided to hold off on that because they were alerted that the provost and student affairs and the deans were going to be working on this. So I also cannot attend the next two. They meet every Monday from 12 to 2. Can you go?
Thank you. Robert, you want
to just certain? And just that a U does, though, turn into an F if they have not dealt with it within a year, I believe.
Isn't it an F immediately?
Immediately.
Oh, immediately, yeah.
Well, that's according to our policy there, it's in play there.
Yeah, okay. So it might be.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right, why don't we move on to our, we have plenty of time for reports today, so we're not, you know, running out of time by any stretch. First agenda item for the PPC, changes to the major in psychology.
Yeah, as far as I understand it, what psychology is trying to do is simply streamline their advising. So, pulling on that. What they, if they, Art has written a nice little justification on a memorandum that's in your packets. And essentially what they're proposing is to eliminate their supporting units, but leave the total number of units and basic requirements for the major unchanged. And the supporting units mean those are the units taken in other departments, but apparently all their majors were already taking their supporting units in psychology. They had a lot of options. So I think this just makes it their electives that they can take. It's more broad for their major. And it doesn't have that much of an effect other than that. This also works into, they used to have these optional advisory plans where they gave students different, depending on their interests, different different plans of courses they could take. They've eliminated that and substituted a list of interest areas that represent the expertise of the faculty. So I think students are expected to take their, choose their major courses, their psychology major courses, and their supporting courses in connection with whatever their emphasis is of interest. The other thing they did was to add a recommended research methods menu, and you can see that on page 2 of their actual proposal. It's a list of different methods courses the students can take depending on their interests. And I think all of these changes are really just designed to make their advising, they have so many students that their advising, the impact on their department just for advising alone is just really, really serious. So I think this will make their life easier. Now, it was just that little phrase in there, it is our intention to cross-list research courses with other departments, that attracted the notice of one of our members in EPC who had a real issue with cross-listing courses. It was unclear to me what the problem was. It had something to do with who would control the content of those courses that were cross-listed down the road. And which is why Art has included the paragraph, which is why it didn't pass unanimously at EPC. So this is not actually, this cannot go forward as a consent item. But the issue, I think, has been resolved to that member's satisfaction due to a series of emails that passed back and forth. And I don't think those emails need to be included in the Senate packet anymore. I don't think so. I think they just kind of confused the issue. But Art's paragraph about the question of policies related to the cross-listing of course listings, this proposal requires no change in the existing policies for cross-listing courses. So they're not, psychology department is not trying to do anything different than has ever been done before with cross-listing courses. So I think that issue has been resolved. And other than that, there were no major issues raised in EPC.
Thank you, Robin.
Was the question on the cross-listing of courses, was it specific to the psychology department, or was it in general?
In general, yeah. About cross-listing courses in the university.
And I can see that, you know, it is an issue, and so, and I could see that the full center would want to, and in any of these, I want to talk about, because if someone is getting credit, if they're, you know, taking a of course, in any other department, but you're also getting political science credit for it, you want to know in that department, is the course appropriate for getting that kind of credit?
So my understanding is that it's the two departments get together and decide to cross-list them together.
And is that always happening, though?
My understanding is it can't happen unless the two departments agree.
It can never happen unless the two departments agree. It's supposed to, in fact, all cross-listed courses are supposed to be referred to the curriculum committee of those departments. English cross-lists a number of courses, has cross-listed a number of courses, is cross-listing courses today, and that's an agreement between the two affected departments, and it is referred to the curriculum committee of the department that both receiving the cross-listing and the one that's initiating.
And had that already happened?
Is that the point you're making?
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
No, that was out.
Anything else? Is there any objection to this going forward to the Senate as a business item? Hearing none?
The only question I have is what are we going to say about cross-listing? I see that Mary Holliday did ask that her email be included as a cover memo, but it seems to me that if cross-listing matter is not an issue, that that's going to be counterproductive.
That's why I think not including her email, I think it would just confuse the issue. I can just briefly state that was what the issue was, and it's been resolved. And then maybe that could be it.
Are there any other questions, comments, objections? If there's no objection, it'll go forward as a business item. Thank you. We have 5 minutes before next time service, so why don't we go to, I guess, just continue with the standing committees and go to Bob Coleman, Chair of APC.
APC, part of what you've got is from the Chair of EPC, Elaine Donald here. And we have been working in these task groups, and one of the task groups, of course, is the general education task group. What you have before you is essentially a proposal that was supposed to come to APC prior to being disseminated, very frankly, because APC was supposed to look at it, and it did, in fact, look at this. Yeah, it did, in fact, look at the document today, made some revisions. And those revisions, Jake Marks will bring, and I will send it forward to you, ASAP, as soon as I have it in my hands. The concern in the committee, and I think you can read this also in the minutes, the concern was, that we should, in addition to what's here on the paper, one, that we should ask the question, at least have an ongoing discussion of the question as to exactly specifically what is wrong right now with RGE, and that specific to the departments. What, and with the idea of what works within their GE, what doesn't work within their GE, what would they like to see, the departments specifically like to see change. There's a different sort of feel within the committee as to whether or not that has been done sufficiently. Some of us believed it, it had been a part of an ongoing discussion for the last 2.5 years. Others felt that it perhaps had not gone in the direction that it could best do to go in order to produce the kinds of discussion that will allow us to make a commitment to any curriculum programs coming out. The other issue was the one of the support and how the both resource and fiscal support for GE. The committee, I believe, as a whole, I think I can speak to this as the mass of the committee basically is in agreement that this proposal should be handled no differently than any of the proposals that have come before us in terms of our recommendations with respect to our planning document. That is, what we have made recommendations based upon whether or not program, number one, is curricularly sound, it fits in with our mission, and two, that it is responsive to the impact issues. Both in terms of resources and physical resources, as well as personnel resources.
Which proposal? Yeah. This document or the
whole GE path? The whole GE path. Mm-hmm. this proposal that we have is really, in fact, a way we get people to think about how to get, you know, we want to get them thinking about this proposal as it comes to them, so that there's really a rich discussion rather than simply people throwing up barriers to the proposal that is before them. So those two things, namely the sort of the background question of what is the status of our present GE, and coming to some real assessment on that question, and to a picture of what this is going to cost in terms of resources. And I would say this in this body, that it has been traditional, that not traditional, this has been part of our process, that while APC may ask that question in terms of its recommendations, it is enforced its recommendation, it has been EPC's role to make sure that that assessment takes place. And so we're expecting for that to occur at the level of EPC. That's one thing. The other thing that we were looking at, we briefly handled it, was this issue of transferability. The chair, Catherine Ness, the chair of the Senate, asked all the chair committees to respond to the transferability proposal. And there are a number of concerns that reflected in our response to it. One, of course, is the question of the autonomy of our university with respect to the kind of program that we want to offer. The question of what will this mean for majors, whether or not we're asking for standardization, whether or not standardization actually can sustain itself in all disciplines the same way. So that's another thing that we began the discussion of, but that was not completed. The third discussion we had was the discussion of the residential life. And the residential life task group has been doing some really good work in trying to get at how we can make begin to assess what is going on in the residence, and beginning to think about the way in which the residents can be or should be recognized as a part of our curricular offerings. We do right now have a FIG program. The FIG program is a response of the people in the residence to trying to bring about a coherent first-year experience for the students. They actually have discussion groups, and they live in FIG dorms, as a FIG areas, as it were. So there's a clear sense that the curriculum is, in some sense, trying to find a way into the dorms, and that we need to begin, we need to continue thinking about how the curriculum can come into the dorms, how the curriculum can be tied to residential life, and what we need to do to make sure that that tie is a strong one and an effective one in terms of students' education.
Thank you. We're in our time certain for our next agenda, so we might as well move on. EPC, Early Childhood Education Certificate. Elaine McDonald, Chair of EPC.
Well, I would just like to say I am always so impressed with the School of Education because I am always so thoroughly confused by all of the different demands placed on all of these different programs that change, it seems, on a yearly basis. They have to change things. So I'm glad Melanie's here because maybe she can help me out with this proposal. So essentially what we have here, and I think Johanna Philp and Patricia Nero, did I say her name right? Nero. Have laid it out pretty well in these first two paragraphs that essentially say, oh, I'm not looking at the revised one actually. They essentially say that the state did away with what used to be called the multiple subject credential with an emphasis in early childhood education. So the state did away with that. But what then the state then recommended is that universities could create their own certificate programs that would pretty much do the same thing. And so that's what this proposal does, is it creates, it does away with the, it can't offer the, that multiple subject credential with the emphasis, so that instead the students will get their multiple subject credential and then take extra classes to get their certificate of emphasis in, I don't exactly know what the name of it is, certificate of emphasis, period, that's what they call it. An early childhood education emphasis credential. And the reason why having a certificate is important is that I guess the state is moving towards having more universal preschool programs for all children, that they're gonna set up these programs so that all children have the opportunity to go to preschool. And they need teachers to run these preschools, and the having a certificate of emphasis in early childhood education will be important in getting jobs like that. So there are no new courses that they're offering. They have about 20 students that are currently in the program that's now being done away with that would be interested in getting the certificate. And I think the rest of this just lays out exactly what they will say the early childhood certificate is these three courses that are already currently being offered by the school. And then students already get their multiple subject credential before that.
Any questions, comments?
Amazing.
Google has been unanimous?
It was completely unanimous, yeah, all the way along.
That was not a question on that issue, something that I might have forgotten to mention.
Okay, when we're done with this, we'll go. Is there any objection to this going forward as a consent item?
No.
Okay. Make it so. You're the agenda creator. All right. Anything else on this?
Thank you.
Agenda item? Okay. Bob?
Reviewing the makeup of the committee, I came across the fact that a number of our members that are large members are really assigned, they leave office at the same time. And so I would like to ask this body to charge structures and function to come up with some way of staggering those memberships so that we can have an effective turnover without losing a large number of people all at one time.
Which I believe would require a change in the bylaws, because I believe, which is not a problem, I'm just suggesting that the structure and functions. Right. Is there any objection to structure and functions looking into that?
Basically, it's just a problem of depleting our resources.
Yes, you know, this EPC is having exactly the same problem at the end of the year, and I'm looking for the list that I made. It's amazing how much turnover we're going to have at the end of this year, and it would be great to have our
Executive Committee, February 26, 2004, tape number 2.
And after that, and let all of you know. Don't leave it, okay?
Well, we'll have just correct. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we might be on the stage, we might be in the audience, we might be in the 19, and we might go back to the comments, Larry.
No,
the food had better follow us. We're
I think I'd rather you ate before the presentation.
we'll talk about that later. All right. Okay.
Wouldn't it request that I think that you consider Phil's comment, though, about we do normally meet there, and I can't see the awkwardness, and if it takes us 5 minutes to get back, I don't think it's a huge thing, but I know you'll decide.
We'll work it out, okay. I appreciate everybody's confidence in me on this matter. Okay, so we will have the Green Center presentation. I'm estimating that will take 45 minutes. That means we have the rest of the agenda to deal with. Since Kathy Kaiser and Bob Cherney are going to be here, I'd like to give that at least half an hour, 35 minutes, for the same reasons that Bob was talking about earlier. So if you take that 45 minutes and that 35 minutes, that's about an hour, I believe, an hour and 20 minutes. All right, that leaves us 40 minutes. But this does not include to and fro time, where right. We're going to and fro. So we have a whole lot of second readings left. And I know that the there are two, I believe, that are time sensitive. One is the joint doctoral program, and the other is the resolution to assess faculty confidence in the SSU Senate and administration. The others may be time sensitive as well. If they are more time sensitive than these two, I don't know about it. If we go for one or both of these, then we have 15 minutes apiece left, or 20 minutes apiece left, which is generally on second time certain we go for around 20 minutes, half an hour, depending on the nature of the issue. Melanie and then Bob. So if I could have some advice.
Well, if starting at 3, and we're not going to actually be over, back over probably, and start the guests at 4, and so then we're talking till 4:30, some 5, maybe, so it's like 25 minutes plus an extended, maybe 45 minutes. The joint doctoral program people did ask me that if it is on this agenda, that it be late in the afternoon, and it definitely, and that it not be postponed due to lack of time, that they would rather wait. If there were a possibility of it being postponed, because they're bringing people in.
Okay, you said
attend.
Oh. So they do or they don't care if it's postponed?
They would rather postpone and know that they had a time certain in
okay,
2 weeks.
Okay. Bob?
I was going to just go in that same direction, but it was that the joint doctorate program folks told us last week they would like to get this finished and move forward.
Right.
So I would recommend that we, in fact, make this our primary item. This is certainly time certain. While I see that the resolution to assess faculty confidence is, in fact, a great concern, it is not time sensitive. Plus, we have a problem with that. So I would think that that would be the first thing I would move off the list. Not because I don't want to deal with it, because I do want to deal with it, and because also I know there's going to be some discussion.
Yeah.
So,
excuse me, go ahead.
So I would suggest that we do the joint doctorate and address that immediately. We have the draft version, the mission statement. We have ongoing discussion. I think it's a crucial thing that we have that mission statement, some consensus around it, because we are now moving to the level of establishing initiatives. And it would be good for the faculty as a whole to have some thinking going on there, some sense that there's people who are in that body who may be on strategic planning can take away from that meeting some sense of it. Okay, so those are two items I think that should be primary.
Okay, Robert Anthony?
Well, I too wanted to recommend that the joint doctoral program, I was going to say be moved up. I didn't hear a lot of controversy, not that that would have come out in the first reading, but what did they mean by later in the day? Because...
Well, Bob Veith is going to be over in Sacramento that afternoon, and so he has to rush back to get to this. So by later in the day, 4:30,
mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I don't think so. I would definitely...
And for backup, for number two, if we get to it, what would you recommend, Robert? Would you also go to the draft mission?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Elaine? I actually think that the resolution to assess faculty confidence is somewhat pressing because we need to set up a committee to create the survey, and it's my understanding that those sorts of things take a while to create. So I don't hear a lot of controversy about the draft vision and mission statement. I think that that could be postponed, but the resolution to assess faculty confidence, I think, should be addressed before. So I would disagree with Bob and Robert.
Do you agree with the joint doc?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Okay. That's a given. Sorry.
It was, if I may, just one correction. I wasn't recommending dropping that off. I think that. I didn't hear a lot of concern on the joint doctoral program, and yes, there was a request for a revision on the mission statement, but I expected that they would move along, as is what I'm saying, but I wasn't suggesting dropping
the assessment, resolution on assessing.
Yes.
Mel first and then.
Okay. I second Elaine's point.
Okay, Melanie?
Well, structure and functions has been having these resolutions, I mean, these amendments on for months and months. And, you know, so other business comes up and these just get pushed aside. And really, I would like to, rather than having other things that, the resolution to assess faculty confidence, this body recommended it go back to the auditor. Instead, it was brought forward to the Senate, and now it's bumping other items of business that have been there for a long time. And so I would be in favor of completing some of that business.
That would be another strategy. There are two or three things here that will probably go like that, so that would be another option, Bob Cole.
Well, I don't want to be taken that I'm saying that this item should not be addressed. I'm saying that basically the issue of the question of time, the criticalness of the time. If you recall in the discussion, the Senate members, one of the first questions that was raised is, why is this so critical right now to move forward? And this came up in at least two or three different contexts. So my thing is that the business that we had on these amendments have been sitting here. The people who are going to be affected by them, we keep talking about our part-timers in this regard. This issue needs to be addressed. It needs to be finished up. The business needs to be moved forward. If, in fact, we can get to it, this other item, then fine. But I think that because we have pushed it up on the agenda without regard to these other items that need to be resolved, we need to find a proper place in terms of our schedule requirements.
I am just requesting some clarification here. I understood at our last executive committee meeting that we asked that that resolution be returned to the author, which I believe happened, and I believe it was the author that came forward at the Senate and asked that it be added to the agenda,
right,
which I believe is the right of any senator to
under
do.
Under Robert's rules, yes.
So I don't believe that we are acting out of order in putting that on the agenda and bringing that forward.
Okay, Phil and then Melanie?
I have a question. I was at the statewide Senate committee meetings 2 weeks ago and didn't realize, I did realize that the executive committee didn't approve the resolution to be on the Senate agenda and that it was brought forward. Shouldn't it have been announced at the Senate that the executive committee rejected putting that resolution on the Senate agenda? And I mean, I don't know what you decided at the meeting 2 weeks ago, but I'm hearing this for the first time. What did you decide 2 weeks ago?
Well, I wasn't there. I was
you
not
were at the same meeting.
I was in the same town you were. I don't remember the same meetings. We talked about whether or not the executive, procedurally, whether or not it would be appropriate if a senator brought a resolution to the Senate to be put on the agenda, whether it would be appropriate to tell the body that the executive committee had not put this on the agenda because they had concerns about it. And I heard a variety of different opinions, and I decided not to because I thought it might prejudice, which I was trying to respect the rights of the author. I came down on the side of the rights of the author because as has been pointed out, any senator can bring any resolution to this body or to the Senate procedurally. And I defaulted to the rights of the author in that case, and I chose not to say anything about it. It would have been appropriate if somebody objected, which nobody did, to say something at that point, but that was my call. And it may have been right, it may have been wrong, but that was my call. I was not at the meeting. Melanie informed me where it happened. I read the minutes, and I just defaulted to Peter's rights.
And what did happen? What did the executive committee decide on that resolution?
It was referred back to the author, and I was charged to review the concerns of the executive committee with the author, and supported by the minutes. And so Laurel did type up the minutes the next day so that they were ready early, and I did send an email to Peter and offered to sit down with him, but he emailed me back saying thank you, but he did already get a copy of the minutes and didn't feel there was any lack of clarity. clarity or need to sit down.
And the concerns expressed at the executive committee, as I understand them, were about the implementation process more than about the substance of some kind of assessment itself. The concerns had to do with there was no specification about the nature of the survey instrument. There was no, help me out here, Melanie. It was the survey instrument itself. It was a question of the membership of the committee. There were two separate resolutions at the time. There was one, a resolution for assessment, and then there was a separate resolution, which is called for under the bylaws to establish the ad hoc committee, which is the path that the author wants to go on this, that the Senate establish an ad hoc committee, and that requires a further set of procedures, and that was the second resolution. So when Peter brought this whole thing to the Senate, he merged it all into one. And that was the major issue. But there
and the concern that the ad hoc committee was seemed to be one time only, and yet the resolution for review was every 3 years and ongoing. So it didn't seem to mesh, and there were questions.
Yes, yeah, mostly about implementation. Okay, so that was the deal. Okay, we have Melanie, Robert McNamara.
Can I just reply to it?
Very quickly, please.
Well, you know, I respect your decision, and I think it was a difficult balancing act. But I do feel uncomfortable that the Senate doesn't know the history of it.
So do I.
And that, of course, can be rectified at our next meeting.
That's what I thought in the second reading would be the most. Okay, Melanie?
I just wanted to respond that I would certainly not, I certainly support a senator bringing something directly to the Senate. So I wasn't trying to imply that was inappropriate. It's just in terms of the order of our business, I was advocating for completing business for the lecturers that has been there. We told them we would have this resolved by the end of last semester, and we keep pushing it.
Okay, Robert?
Well, I just wanted to respond that I'm not sure it would have been appropriate to say that the Senate had rejected that resolution, because in fact, it was different from the original, from the way we originally had reviewed it. And one of the major concerns was is that there were actually two resolutions, and there was concern the way it was presented. So we may not still have sent it forward in the form it went, but it was different from what we reviewed.
I just respond to that.
Very quickly, please.
Well, it's tied in. I was uncomfortable when Peter was asked directly where the resolution came from that he hedged. He said he and some faculty, and he kept refusing or omitting to name the faculty. Okay, so it's connected with this mysterious problem.
Okay, so we're getting off into the resolution rather than the agenda, which is what we need to focus on. Elaine?
I'll pass.
Bob Coleman?
I would like very much for us to, I'd like to move that the first item on the agenda would be the item dealing with the joint doctorate.
After the Green Music Center presentation.
After the Green Music Center.
The
joint doctorate be given a time certain and at 4:30. And that the next items on the agenda will be the amendment items presented by Structures and Function Chair, Melvin Dresma. After that, you can do whatever you want to do with it. So my motion is to have the joint doctorate at 4:30, certain if you want to split the issue, I'll be more than happy to do so. Joint doctorate at 4:30, and then the amendments to be set at a time that Chair Dresma will think appropriate, and have those as time certain.
I just changed my last name.
I was going to say because...
Okay, is there a second? Is there a second?
A little premature.
Is there a second to the motion? Hello out there. Is there a second to the
motion?
I'll
second it.
Okay, we now have a second. We now have a motion on the floor to add to the agenda after the Green Music Center presentation and the faculty trustee and statewide chair presentation. In this order, the joint doctorate in education at a time certain 4:30, and then the structural functions amendments regarding lecture senators at whatever time certain is appropriately established. And it has been seconded. no one's going to ask if you want to go first since you have your name.
Thank you. I appreciate that. My inclination is to speak against the proposal. However, I would like to hear from Senator, who is present, lecturer Senator, and regarding, because the issue that Melanie has raised deserves close consideration, and you are here to speak in that regard.
Ex-Secretary Wilson, whatever your status is?
A guest.
Mr. Wilson. Professor Wilson.
I'm certainly happy to have the lecturer's issues moved forward, certainly, but what my concern would be that there's going to be a lot of concern about the assessment resolution, and if we have the joint doctorate starting at 4:30, I don't think that people are going to be satisfied with the amount of time that will be available for the assessment resolution. And so I would support if I was able to, I would support Senator Coleman's motion.
Hey, Robert Mapner.
Just a question: can we not simply prioritize these? It doesn't mean we have to leave something off. I mean, we regularly do not get to the full business like the lectures we've been on there.
Right, nothing will be taken off the agenda.
It's just prioritize.
Put time certain down on the ones we know we want to get to. And that's
okay,
what Robert's
doing. Okay, and I would support that.
The motion? Elaine McDonald, and folks, we have about 5 minutes left.
I guess I want to remind us all that we do actually have another business item, the EPC, the psychology.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because it was
true.
Which is not listed here, but.
That's true.
Shouldn't take very long.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of long. So, is there any other discussion of the motion? All right. To repeat, the motion is to, after the Green Music Center and the visitors, put the joint doctorate at a time certain 4:30 and the structure and functions resolutions regarding lectures at a time certain to be set after that, which would be somewhere around 10 till 5, give or take. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Can we do a little louder, more with more enthusiasm?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
It used to be contrary. All right, that is what.
Point of information, are you putting 5 as the end? 5:15 or 5:30
or 6.
Not just 6.
Just how much French champagne are we going to have available?
But doesn't that.
Would you guys laugh? It's
usually on the agenda.
Yeah, is it okay to extend the meeting to 5:15? And will we all set a great example and stay?
I can't. Because I have a call.
You
at
have
5.
A class. Rick wants to go 5:30.
No.
You mean for the executive committee or for the
no,
Senate?
No, no, no. I think 5:15 is necessary. Okay? If necessary, if we get done with the lectures, resolutions, and the joint doc by 5 o'clock, I say that's fine. All right. Okay.
But if there's an item on the agenda,
I think we have managed to hold a quorum after 5 o'clock, what, once? That's not true, because you guys have
been
able to
stay for
10
minutes.
Okay.
With some people,
all right, 5:15 it is, and if we lose a quorum, we lose a quorum.
Yeah.
Is there any other business before, Tony Gow tells me the statewide senator, he does not have a report, so we're done with our reports. Is there any other business for the committee? You will note, we are actually 2.5 minutes. The first thing in your packet is information item only. It's executive membership on executive committees throughout the system. They are adjourned.